Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, let's go. And this segment is being brought to you by CeCe's. Now at CeCe's, you can order your own personal pizza. There's thousands of ways to customize it your way, include it with your buffet. Just five and change at CeCe's. Dine in only. Price may vary. Restrictions apply. Now look, we're on until the Illini game. The Illini game starts at 7:30. That means I got like 20 minutes with my guy Jack Silverstein. We always get it wrong here. We got it right, like Silverstein, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Because we were looking at your spoken word, and the lady called you Silverstein, and I was like, no, I think it's Silverstein.
You know what's funny? My parents and my brother say Steen, and it's a too long of a story, but I say Stein.
Really?
Yeah. There's no agreement in the Silverstein family.
In the family?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
All right, so Jack writes for Windy City Gridiron. He is incredible. I've known Jack since he was out covering the Bears and when I was covering the Bears. He's a sports historian. Is that a fair way to acknowledge what you do?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that you are a crackerjack researcher. And whenever you come in here, you always got something where I'm like, ooh, I didn't know that. So look at that. That is crazy. I went over your piece that you wrote about Brian Urlacher's Hall of Fame candidacy.
Yes.
And it is... there's a lot of stuff in there that I hope that voters take into account. But the first thing I want to ask you about this, you looked into the voters too.
Yeah.
What trends did you see when it came to the Pro Football Hall of Fame voters?
So what people have to understand about the way that the Pro Football Hall of Fame works, there's 48 voters. 32 of them are tied to a specific NFL market. So obviously we have two in New York or New Jersey, but 32 tied to a team, 16 at large. They go from having 108 nominees, the modern era nominees, and that's where Brian is, Urlacher. They go from there, they went down to 27 semifinalists. They're now at 15 finalists. And on the day before the Super Bowl, all of the voters will meet in Minneapolis, where the Super Bowl is held, and they will powwow. And they will get everybody down from 15 to 10, and then from 10 to 5. And then they will do an up-down, yes-no vote on the remaining five guys.
It has to be 80%, right?
It's got to be 80%. You have to have 80% of the vote, of the up-down, yes-no vote, to get in. And then there's two people in the seniors committee and one contributor. You could have a Hall of Fame class as big as eight people. And there's going to be five from this modern era group that get in. So the way that it works is the person from the city presents for that player. In this case, Dan Pompey, now of The Athletic, is the Chicago representative. He's also on the senior board. And so he's going to present the case for Urlacher. Now, when a guy doesn't really love the player or he wants to acknowledge that there are personality issues, as the writer who sort of talked in Warren Sapp a few years ago did, and he opened – it was a great Sports Illustrated article, and he opened by saying – Warren Sapp is a real such and such, but he belongs in the Hall of Fame. And that like worked for everybody, but even that was negative. And Dan Pompey is going to have nothing but great things to say about Brian. He's written about him. He says he's first ballot. And everybody who you talk to, these guys are going to get like a packet of information, but then they're also going to call all of their colleagues, everybody in football. They're going to call Brian's teammates, his opponents, his coaches, and you are not going to find one person who delivers a less than sterling pitch for why Brian Urlacher belongs in the Hall of Fame. And that's kind of how it goes. These guys all get together in this room. There's little different factions. Peter King from Sports Illustrated is a very respected voice. He has written that he's going to vote for Brian to go into the Hall of Fame. So it's going to be this powwow. Excuse me. And I think Brian's going to go in.
My concern.
Yeah.
It has been some of the guys that are who have been left off. Like, to me, it's a crime that Terrell Owens is not in the Hall of Fame.
Awful.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Stupid.
Because you could make the argument that he's the second greatest wide receiver who ever lived.
Absolutely.
Although, another one of those guys is on the ballot this year.
Yeah.
Isaac Bruce, you know, I read your case, and I read the case that you were making for the five that you thought that were getting in. I understand that people will not automatically go, Isaac Bruce is a Hall of Famer. But 15,000 yards.
He put up numbers.
A ton.
The thing with me, my thing with Isaac Bruce is that he had one Pro Bowl season, and then he kind of fell off. And he was off until the 1999 Super Bowl run. And so when you look at him in the context of the other guys on that team, obviously Marshall Faulk's one of the greatest offensive weapons we've ever seen. Kurt Warner put up some of the greatest Hall of Fame quarterback. Torrey Holt, I was surprised.
13,000 yards for
Torrey
Holt.
Yeah, but Torrey has something that Isaac did not have, which is a first-team selection.
Okay.
And when I start looking at who is worthy of the Hall of Fame, and listen, all 15 of these guys are worthy to some degree of the Hall of Fame, but when I start really breaking it down, I look at those first-team selections, the all-pro selections. Because a Pro Bowl, you can get in on an injury. You can get in when somebody in the Super Bowl is like, actually, no, not for me. There's all sorts of ways. There's no wiggle room on those all-pro teams. You're on it or you're not. So to me, that is a huge, huge deal. If you can be a first-team all-pro, that means you're one of the two best players at your position as far as wide receivers. Brian has four first-team all-pros. And during his career from 2000 to 2012, there were, you know, that's 13 years. There were 13 Defensive Player of the Year awards given out, 12 players because Ray Lewis won twice in that period. The biggest concentration of one position group that won DPOY during Brian's time was at linebacker. Six of the 13 awards went to linebackers. So when Brian's getting first team All Pro, when he wins Defensive Player of the Year, he's getting it against the very, very best in the NFL. When he gets a first-team All-Pro, he's getting it against other people who are up for Defensive Player of the Year. You see what I mean?
That's a very strong argument.
You have to look at where the positions break down, where the strength is. And he had, obviously, Ray and him, Derek Brooks, Terrell Suggs, James Harrison. Jason Taylor was like linebacker slash D-line. These are all guys who won Defensive Player of the Year, who Brian was beating out for first-team All-Pro. Brian also went toe-to-toe for 7 years with Ray Lewis under the question of who is the best middle linebacker in the game.
And what did your numbers tell you about that?
Well, my numbers told me that from 2000 to 2006, which is half of Brian's career, it was split. They each had four first-team All-Pros. They were both Defensive Player of the Year.
Didn't Brian play in more games? Because I think that Ray Lewis missed 10 games in 2002 and 10 games in 2006.
Yeah, and then Brian missed games in 2004. And then he missed the entire, I mean, this isn't in this little group, but he missed the entire 2009. He broke his wrist in the first game of the season. But the point is that Ray Lewis, basically from 2000, was getting talk as being the greatest middle linebacker of all time. There are four who have been in first ballot: Singletary, Buckus, Nitschke, and Lambert. And starting in 2000, when Ray Lewis won the Super Bowl and Super Bowl MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, it was like, wow, Ray Lewis might be the best middle linebacker of all time. Well, 2000 was Brian's rookie year. And the next year, Brian's first team All-Pro with Ray. And from 2001 to 2006, those guys were battling. I mean, you could make a strong case. You wouldn't be laughed out of any room if you said Brian Urlacher is the best middle linebacker in the game. Well, if you're possibly the best middle linebacker in the game and your chief competition is someone who is possibly the best middle linebacker of all time, that means that for 7 years, more than half of his career, Brian Urlacher was arguably better than the guy who's arguably the best middle linebacker of all time. And when these 48 voters get together in a room, that's going to be brought up because you have Ray Lewis who's going in. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame, period. And my selections, who I would pick, are Lewis, Moss, Owens, Urlacher, and Alan Faneca, the great guard for the Steelers. So if I'm in that room and I'm making an argument for Brian, I'm saying, all right, we all agree that this guy right here, Ray Lewis, is first ballot. Well, Brian Urlacher was arguably better than him for half of his career when they were both in their prime. Ray Lewis also played with two other defensive players of the year, Ed Reed and Terrell Suggs. Now, I'm not going to say, oh, well, because he had these great teammates, he wasn't great. Well, he was, but when you start looking at, like, well, Ray Lewis has two Super Bowl rings, or Ray Lewis played on this defense, that, I'm like, he played with some good, good top-of-line guys. And, you know, Brian did too, but he was never not the best player on that defense, whereas Ray Lewis maybe not at certain times. And I think all this stuff is going to factor in when you look at that argument.
My concern is on the up-down vote.
Yeah.
And my concern is that there will be people who think that Brian is a Hall of Famer, but don't think that he should go in with Ray. That if you put Ray in, I think that they're 100% wrong. And your research shows that. But there are going to be some people who, the mystique of Ray Lewis, I think will factor in. That's my worry, that it will factor in and people go, well, is Brian Urlacher as good as Ray Lewis? No. Well, then they both shouldn't be on the same Hall of Fame class. And to me, that's crazy, because I think when you look at both of their careers, you go, yes. To me, no one should be kept out. Like, I hate that they limit it. I hate that they're only five guys. You should, if you're great, you should just go. People shouldn't have to wait. Like, there shouldn't be this thing of, well, this player is great, but he's not quite great enough this year. But next year he'll be good. Like, that to me is crazy. All of these guys deserve it.
Yeah.
Faneca, Bocelli, like all of these, like, put them in.
Hutchinson, Mawai.
Absolutely.
Brian Dawkins.
Absolutely.
Now, I'll be interested to see what effect the Philadelphia Eagles being in the Super Bowl will have on voters who are looking at two very, very, very strong candidates, T.O., who you and I agree should be in right now, and Brian Dawkins, who should definitely go in, if not this year, then next. And I wonder what effect it will have being a voter in Minneapolis during the Super Bowl, surrounded by all these Eagles fans, surrounded by all these stories about the last time the Eagles were in the Super Bowl, where their best defensive player was Dawkins and their best offensive player was Owens, surrounded by all sorts of people who can tell you great stories about why Dawkins was, you know, Owens and all this. People are going to be talking about, well, the last time the Eagles were in the Super Bowl and they played the Patriots, and Terrell Owens had a broken leg and he had 9 catches, 122
yards. Was the best player on the field for that Super Bowl.
Best player on the field. And Brian Dawkins, 9 Pro Bowls, 4 All-Pro, you know, at times the best safety in the game in a league that included Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu. And those two guys are going in very soon as well. So I wonder if that's going to have an effect. As far as like the positional thing, a lot of people now just say kind of as a fact, oh, well, two guys from the same position aren't going to go in together, or they don't do that. But that's not true at all. If you look at the history of it, and I'm talking recent history,
okay,
it has happened a number of times just since 2006. There have been multiple years where two quarterbacks went in. LaDainian Tomlinson and Terrell Davis went in the same year. You've had multiple O-linemen. You've had multiple D-linemen. You've had multiple linebackers. So that idea, I think, comes up from this wide receiver grouping where it seemed like every year there were 5 wide receivers who should go in and only one did, and it became this thing, well, they only put in one guy from a position. I don't buy that. I think that Lewis is going in, but I don't think that that is necessarily going to negate Brian.
Okay.
And again, a lot of it's going to come down to stories. Anyone you talk to about Brian, they're going to give you an amazing story. All these stories written by Brad Biggs and Dan Pompey, they interview Rodgers and Favre and Mike McCarthy and Corey Schlesinger and, you know, opponents and teammates, Tony Dungy, and they all have wonderful things to say about Brian.
Talking with Jack Silverstein, who writes for Windy City Gridiron. You should follow him on Twitter at ReadJack. He does incredible work of, like, sifting through everything and really presenting a very good story in history of the game. When I look at Brian Urlacher's career, and I got a chance to cover the majority of it pretty up close, the thing that I'll remember about it is how much ground he was able to cover. that you knew that the middle, the deep middle third of the field was going to be handled by him. That even if he was mugging the A-gap, he would find himself 25 yards downfield and in a position to make a play. That there were times where guys seemed open down the middle of the field and Urlacher would break up the pass. And you're like, wow, like how did he get there? The awareness and the athleticism that we aren't just talking about a freak. Like he was a freak athletically, but also a student of the game.
Yeah, he was a freak intellectually as well.
Absolutely. And I hope that those things go into account, that people understand that it wasn't just because he was an athletic freak that he was able to do this, but it was also because he understood tendencies. He watched film like a crazy person, mm-hmm. and knew exactly where the quarterback wanted the ball to be placed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that comes partially from his experience as a DB in college. Remember, he was a safety linebacker. They invented a new word for him in New Mexico, the Lobo back. And I think part of it is that. I think part of it is adapting to different schemes. One thing that doesn't get talked about enough with Brian is that he played in two totally different defenses as kind of two different people. With Dick Duran, he was up near the line. He had Washington and Traylor in front of him in 2001. He had, I think, 32 of his 41 and a half career sacks in his first four seasons. Then Lovie comes in, and now Lovie says, hey, actually, we're going to play this cover two. We want you dropping back. And now he's involved in pass defense. He's knocking balls down. He's getting interceptions. I mean, he was everywhere. And I think in a weird way, his speed maybe hurt him historically and even at the time, because when he started to lose a step, when he started to get just a tiny bit slower, people thought that like, oh, well, it's done. Because the conversation around him was always, he's so fast. He's so fast for a middle linebacker. Oh my God, the speed. He can guard Vic, you know, sideline to sideline. And he was amazing in 2011. And he was terrific, even injured, in 2012. Remember, he had the pick six against the Titans.
That's right.
And he would have a few more Pro Bowls. I mean, not that it should matter. We're splitting hairs here. He should be going in this year. But he would have a few more Pro Bowls, I believe, if it weren't for his lost speed altering his narrative. And if it didn't seem like after maybe 2003, it always felt like people tied his skill to the team's skill. So he was.
It's kind of the way that people talk about Charles Tillman, that Charles Tillman is a system corner, that because they played cover two, or the same thing with Lance, because Lance played
right.
the weak side linebacker position like Derek Brooks, that the plays just came to him. And that's how he was able to make as many tackles as he made in his entire career.
Right. What's wild, I think, about Charles is that he really created a new mold.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a guy who would have more Pro Bowls if people understood at the time what he was doing. And he really, a lot of years, he got beat out for the Pro Bowl by someone who just had a career year in interceptions. And the next guy who enters the NFL in the Charles Tillman mold and has Tillman's career is going to be a perennial Pro Bowler, because he will come in and on the day of the NFL draft, they're going to say, this is a kid, he's here in the Charles Tillman mold. And there was no mold.
And you're seeing a lot of these kids now, like, emulating what he was doing, trying to take the ball away. When his candidacy comes up, it's going to be really, really interesting. Back to the Lewis Urlacher thing, and a texter asked the question, does off the field matter?
So technically it doesn't. Technically, based on the bylaws, you are only supposed to vote based on what a player does on the field, you know, what his team does on the field, and then on the field, I'm putting in quotes, that extends to the locker room, the sideline, et cetera.
That's the argument against Terrell Owens.
And Randy Moss, and that's what Bill Polian, the Hall of Fame general manager, came out and said. Someone asked him, I think last year, well, who would you vote for first for the Hall of Fame, Randy or T.O.? And he said, well, I would take neither, because they're not the kind of guy we would want on our team and all this nonsense. I'm like, all right, well, first of all, that's a fair argument if you're building a team. But you're not. You're voting for people for the Hall of Fame. Secondly, as far as Ray Lewis, I'm sure there are going to be some voters who in the back of their minds feel like, oh my God, this guy played a role in obstructing justice or he should be in prison and all this. I encourage people to read up on the case. It was probably a prosecutorial overreach. Maybe Julie DeCaro can fill us in on that. But point is that I do think that there will be some people who will say, ugh, I got to vote for Ray. I mean, he's a no-brainer, but ugh. And then they'll say like, T.O. and Randy. And I think that that is going to actually play in Brian's favor because—
There isn't that with him.
There isn't that with him. And there will be people who will say, I just want to make sure a good guy gets in. And that could be Brian. It could be Dawkins. It could be Edgerrin James. It could be Ty Law. It could be, I mean, Isaac Bruce. Oh, you know, almost anybody. I mean, nobody has the baggage that those three guys have. But I think that that will play in Urlacher's favor. But to answer the question straight up, no. Ray Lewis's his charge in 2000, that does not matter. It does not technically play a role in the voting based on the way that it's defined.
If you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions that you want answered to cbschicago.com/legal advice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. That's cbschicago.com/legal advice. I got 15 seconds, Jack. Brian Urlacher getting in, first ballot?
Yes, 100%.
Okay, holding you to that.
Do it.
Holding you to that.
Good.
Thank you, as always, man. You always come through with great information.
Absolutely.
Windy City Gridiron is where you can read Jack's stuff. It's amazing.
And I'll say that I've got a profile coming this week, coming Wednesday, on Olin Krutz. That you won't want to miss.
Baby, I love this. This is fantastic. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing the knowledge. Thanks to Herbie and Tony for their hard work. Illini basketball is next here on The Score.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.